Hey everyone, I'm Leon Turkin, as everybody knows, and I'm the founder of Turkin Mortgage. And with me today, I have a good friend of mine. His name is Edward, and he's a landscaper. He's an owner. He's an entrepreneur, just like myself. We've known each other for over a decade now, and Edward's been in his respective business for over a decade. I've been in my respective business for over a decade as well. And we're here to just have an open discussion and talk to each other about what it's like to be an entrepreneur, what motivated us to get into the mindset of being an entrepreneur, how we ended up starting the businesses, where the businesses are at now, where we're heading forward with our respective businesses, and some challenges and some fun stuff that we've done along the way, again, in our respective fields. And we hope you enjoy this conversation. Here we go. Edward, hello.
What's going on?
Welcome, welcome.
Exciting.
So tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into landscaping, and more importantly, why you got into it.
So I started landscaping when I think it was like 17, 18. I was still in university. First year of university, hard to remember. I've had jobs here, as an immigrant since I was 13 years old. And I think when I was about 16, 17, construction just seemed like a job that would pay more than any, job out there. And I was trying to get a job, and there was this one guy. He's a very small show guy. I was doing some work at my relatives. So I literally went there and started begging him to give me a job. I said, "Abdullah, give me a job." "No." I said, "Give me a job." Kept asking for a few days. He said, "Fine, start tomorrow." And I worked with the guy for a few years. Great guy. Really knew what he was doing in a sense of like construction itself. But I was looking at how he conducts business per se, and I was like, there's so many things that could be done better, and this could be scaled. I just didn't know how, but this could be bigger. And I started trying out my own little gigs. I was still in university, so this was more of a summer thing. Didn't have trucks or, expensive tools or machinery at that time, so I used my Toyota Camry. Then I rented some trucks from U-Haul. And I started picking up, getting some jobs here and there. Next thing you know, I came up with a logo, some business cards. It was all very basic, but a lot of enthusiasm went into it. My first company was called Yellow Brick Landscaping. And
Yellow Brick Landscaping. Cool. All right.
Yellow
What
Brick.
happened to that? I'm
You
guessing it's no longer in existence.
It's no longer in existence.
I
Yeah, I
gotcha.
mean, it was, I was young. It was one of those things where I was trying things out. I was still in school. I actually studied to be, my plan was to go to law school. And it was,
I feel like everybody wanted to go to law school at a certain point. I actually saw some Facebook threads between me and you, where I was like gonna write the LSATs, and you were
oh, yeah.
commenting this was like 2008.
Yeah, and I was
You're
gonna
like,
write it,
yeah,
but I
go
don't know.
for
It's just, it was just that point. I'm like, I kind of like this. I like, I like the transformations that we do. I saw a potential to make some good money with that, and I thought I would give it a shot. And that was my first try. Certain things, it's you're starting out of business. You know how to work with your hands, but it's a completely different story. Kind of, acquiring clients, this and that. And I've definitely had some success. However, yeah, I mean, I wasn't really taking it seriously at the time, and that, the whole Yellow Brick establishment dissolved itself.
Yeah.
Until, took a year to figure out what I want to do and where I want to go. And the answer was, back to landscaping. And I think with Avanti is where I really decided to go big.
So it sounds like A, you just kind of winged it in the beginning, like you were young and ambitious.
100%.
And number two, the money was the main motivator to
It
like
was,
get
yeah.
you into being an entrepreneur and a businessman.
Money, yes, but it's also, I think this was, I've had multiple jobs, as I said, since I was 13 years old. And I never, like, any job that I had, I never took it as like, okay, when is my shift going to be over? I wanted to be better than everybody else. Like, that was my thing. I wanted to do things better, more efficient. And I remember to this date, I think I had a job at Sobeys, and I had this manager, you know, he was in his 40s. I was putting some frozen products into the freezer, and he approached me and he said, "Son, you know," so one of those difficult things, it's like, you know, "I've made it to a manager, and if you follow my steps and yada, 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 you know, you can be like me." And I looked at him and I thought to myself, no, dude, like, I don't want to be a manager at Sobeys. No offense to Sobeys, it's a great chain, but I think right there and then I realized that, like, you know, moving up that ladder of some sort, whether it's corporate ladder or some other, it wasn't for me. Like, I had my own opinion, I had my own vision, and I didn't really want to work for anybody. And I think, like, that was one of the things that really pushed me to try things on my own.
So, yeah, being young and ambitious, the beauty of it is, like, it only happens once in your life. And I notice as I'm growing older, the energy is fading, right? So, like, I can't just spray and pray everywhere in terms of different businesses and have my energy diluted amongst so many different avenues. But give us a bit of an understanding in terms of, like, how big your business is now, just so I can understand in terms of, like, how big is your crew, how many trucks do you have, like, how big did you get to? How big did you get to at this moment in time?
I mean, just to get some rough numbers in, I mean, say all in all, we're about a 50-person operation.
50 people.
50 people, yeah.
That are under you, okay.
Yeah, that includes on-site staff, project managers, designers, sales reps, and, you know, kind of the whole team together.
Right.
We have an office, we have a yard, we have another yard, we have tons of equipment, you know, 20, 25 Bobcats excavators, we have 10-plus trucks. Yeah, that's where we are right now.
So you started as a helper back in your very early 20s to a landscaper, and now you've scaled the operation to 50 people, yards, trucks, and the whole galore.
Something like that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Look, I had a pretty similar kind of growth as you did, and very similar reasoning as to why I wanted to become self-employed and an entrepreneur. And yeah, I worked at the bank and I saw people in their 40s and 50s and 60s that have been lifers at the bank. You know what I mean? Like, they've in and out, day in, day out, the last 20, 30 years of their life, they've been at the bank. And I just looked at that and I said, there's no way I could see myself going through that progression.
You know, and then, like, there's really nothing wrong with that. And it works for a lot of people. You know, doesn't make entrepreneurship any special in that sense. It's just, I think people are wired differently, and I think it's important to stay true to yourself. And I think that's where you know, yourself, you just saw that this is not for you, right? And that's why you went to, you know, before your financial service, you did Windows as well, right? I mean, you tried different things.
Yeah, no, I was working since I was 11 years old, so I was accustomed to labor and to work. But, yeah, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with being an employee at the bank or being part of a brand or a chain. That's totally okay. What I'm more so leaning towards is when I was young and you had that epiphany moment when the manager told you, you know, son, keep working and one day you can be in my shoes. You said to yourself, well, is that necessarily what I want to do? The answer was no. And when I looked at it and I said, and I saw how much resources and time and effort the bank wanted from me, they wanted me to be there early, they wanted me to leave late, but the compensation wasn't parallel to the amount of effort that they were asking for me. So I said, well, Leon, you know, if you're going to put in that effort, make sure that the compensation and the reward is worth it. Right. So that was kind of like my why as well. Young, ambitious, not really knowing what's what, but going after the money, going after the big ticket item, betting on myself, right? Can I make it? Can I not? Tell me about your first job and, like, first client experience that you can remember. Obviously, maybe not the very first, but like...
There was a few, but it was honestly...
Because I got a good one myself, but I want to hear yours.
It's very often people ask about marketing and... people that start out, let's say, in construction, how do you get clients? I said, just start spreading the word. Like, whoever you know, just let them know that this is what you do.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. And then, you know, when I want something, I might get a little annoying. I'm probably more reserved now, but back then, you know, just with all that drive and energy, hey, Alex, you do renovations, I do landscaping. Yeah.
Give me a job.
That's exactly what I did, right? I knocked on doors and. Yeah.
Have anything small, like?
Anything.
Yeah.
I would go for anything, dude. Like, I would be loading up. Like, there's that, you know, kind of like this little machine called the plate temper that's, you know, people carry on pickup trucks. I would shove it into the back of my Toyota Camry and I'm strapped, you know.
The straps to the cart.
Yeah, and listen, it was like, you know, I would make 200 or whatever working for a guy. I would go make 300, probably working day and a half. I didn't really care at that time, right? Because then it became a snowball effect. You get a person here, get a person there. It was just that.
At that point, it's just like spray and pray, literally. Whatever you can grab, you grab. And then you go on to the next one. So like the first one isn't really memorable. I got a great first client story I can share with you, but I want to stick with that point for a second. You said, you know, calling, being so, needy in a nicer sense from everybody, like trying to get jobs compared to the person you were interviewing last week when you came by my office and you jumped on the phone and you said she didn't want to like drive out.
Oh, yeah. I
mean, out of her way.
We're looking for a sales coordinator for the company, and then the girl, you know, she's like, I like this job because it's close to my home. And anyway, like the motivation is very different.
Yeah.
The motivation is definitely a lot different.
The motivation these days is absolutely, you know, lacking, I'd say, from the younger generation that I see. Not to say that it's not there, but. I mean, I think in today's society and in today's world, when everything is like so quick on the phone, like bang, 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 you want that fast result. Sometimes people don't understand that entrepreneurship, like it's a grind. It's a 24/7 grind for real. But back to that first client experience, actually, my realtor entrusted me and gave me a client. And I was super happy. I was so happy that I forgot how to do my job. And, you know, I approved him, or at least I thought I approved him until like the week before the closing when I realized I didn't actually do my job properly and he was short like X amount of money. I don't know, he was short like $10,000 or $15,000. So I had to, like, you have to picture this. First client, essentially, from my realtor. So she's depending on me. She's a seasoned veteran. She's giving me, you know, a young buck, a try by giving me a client.
And you fucked it up.
And I screw it up big time. And now I have to face the music, call her, and tell her, hey, Maya, I screwed this up. Help me out here. I'm not sure what to do. And I did, as embarrassed as I was, but we had to save the guy. And I ended up giving him money out of my own bank account to close the deal. So we gave him like a private mortgage, like registered in second position, which is like allowed and stuff like that. Just so we can like close that deal, right? So that was a real like experience and tough lesson for me. Like for one of my first clients, it's like, don't put the cart in front of the horse, dot all your I's, cross all your T's, Leon, you know, before you start celebrating and spending that money, close the deal adequately. You're dealing with people's finances and it's important.
You know, but you, it's you know, but you handled it with honor. I mean, you did mess up, and I think that's what separates a lot of businesses from, you know, good businesses and amateur businesses, is that mistakes happen all the time. They just do. They, things get messed up, but it's you know, do you have the accountability to take care of the problem, right?
Yeah.
And you did, and
And honestly, like the main reason people are still calling me and doing business with me from day one, and I kept asking, why are you dealing with me? Why aren't you dealing with somebody else? The simplest reason is, Leon, you pick up the phone. That's it. I'm accessible. Like there's no magic superpower. I don't know more than the next guy knows. I'm just diligent and I pick up my phone on time and I'm communicable. And people are drawn to that, right? Like I'm looking for the same type of service when I'm getting any type of service. I want the professionals to communicate with me as to what's going on, right? Especially when there's a lot of money on the line.
I think communication is just the key component of any business, and that's what I've been having kind of a challenge with, you know, like getting that team together that once the client calls us, from the first voice they hear in the company is where they're going to start trusting us, right?
Yeah.
Now, since you pick up the phone a lot yourself, that's amazing. And, you know, I've had a pleasure dealing with Leon Services myself
pleasure.
Multiple times. And
call it what it is.
My cases are not easy. I put Leon through hell. But, and I had points where he told me, no, this isn't going to work. But, you know, in certain cases of desperation, I had to reach out to different agents. And, you know, I've wasted a lot of my time doing that to simply realize that this guy just comes through and that's it.
Yeah,
it makes it
easy. I appreciate it, man. Thank you. Tell me about the challenges that you've had in your business. Not all the challenges, but, like, mm-hmm. challenges that you had in the beginning of your career. And challenges like 10 years down the road, like how do they differ?
Some are still similar, but in the beginning it was a lot about getting the clients, hiring was a big thing. You're a smaller company, it's hard to convince good people to work for you.
Mm.
You don't have the stability. Or the
consistent job inflow?
Yeah, and the package that, you know, they might want to go for. So,
yeah.
And I think
you're talking about subcontractors and you're talking about trades?
Just hiring people, right?
People, yeah.
Especially somebody good, right? So it's like, I find that it's not just my case. I see that a lot of times of entrepreneurs in the beginning, they don't have the company to sell. They sell themselves. Mm. It's that drive, those ambitions that attract people. Hiring, getting getting jobs and getting the right money for the job because you don't have the name out there. I think those were initial challenges, paperwork, establishing insurances, and it's all new when you're starting out, and
yeah,
it seems like a lot. Opening banks, bank accounts, that's easy, but then you gotta get commercial insurances, all these registrations, and learning how to do things in a legal way
rather than just half-assing it and cowboy city.
Good intentions, yeah. But it's a lot of things that I did back then, they're not really acceptable today. And it's not that, I wanted to do something wrong. I just didn't know any better.
Right.
As
you go along.
There was no mentorship. There wasn't any mentorship available for landscape. It was just me calling different dudes and saying, how do you do this? How do you do that?
Yeah.
Challenges, that we're facing today are a little different. Company has a good reputation, so it's a lot easier to get good talent.
Yeah.
Because now people want to work for an established company. I think the main challenges right now is maintaining the size, the reputation, maintaining that scale.
Mm.
And the thing is, you can't stop the main challenge is you can't stop growing. You actually can't.
Why? Because the machine is so big and it needs to continue just feeding itself?
It doesn't necessarily, the growth that I'm talking about is not necessarily about growing in revenue or growing in size of people. It's just, your clients are going to get better. Your crews are going to get better. Your customer service needs to get better.
Yeah.
It's a never-ending process. And,
yeah.
And I guess, it's really now stabilizing, in the industry and making an impact. That's a current challenge.
Okay. So from the beginning, if I can just summarize, it was the setup,
yeah.
Right? Wrapping your head about how does the business actually run versus now it's like keeping the machine fed, keeping it nice and lubed up and making sure it operates at an efficient productive level.
Right. And, yeah. There's, when the company is small and just starting out, the risks, they're not as great, right?
Yeah. I was just thinking that.
You know, what I was, I think I was sharing with you actually recently, is that once you get to a certain level, you have a chance to make a great impact and make a lot of profit, but you have the same chance to mess all up, right? So you have to really watch what you're doing, what your people are doing, motivations of your people, you know, systems in place. Systems became very big, processes became very big, delegation became very big.
Delegation, yeah, it's a good one, and we're going to touch on that, but I agree with you. Yeah, in the beginning of my career of being self-employed, man, I was young, 23 years old, talking to like 40, 50-year-olds like about finances, right? So I was like coming in hot out the gate, and I had to sound like I know what I'm doing. I had to act it. I had to look it, right? So it was like almost like a fake it till you make it kind of thing, but I'm also very savvy, very quick-witted. I could pick up information very quickly, and I understand finances, so that came easily. But the challenge in the beginning was, can I build a brand? Can I make a name for myself? Will people like me? Will people like me as the product, right? Because I'm selling myself and my time. That's what I'm selling. And now, you're right, I was just thinking about that as I was asking the question. It's like the risks are so much greater, right? Because now there's an entire company. Right now I manage about 12 people in total. There's a brokerage under my name. So like the details are super important, and they matter. They matter so much more than they mattered back in the day, because everything's on my name. The liability insurance, the licenses, right? The offices, the employees, all the staff, all the lenders. It's my name, it's my reputation, and the risks are that much greater. So it's about managing that risk, but also, managing that risk, not having it, you know, run away from under my feet in a sense, and taking care of things before, taking care of problems before they even occur, in a sense. Delegation is huge, right? Because like you've got staff, I've got staff, and talk to me about delegation. How do you feel about it? I know you and I were talking about it the other day. Like, I feel like this is a big stone that you want to just like lift off your shoulders and toss it in the river.
It's as you, and as you know, I'm here to share my own experience, right? But like as you go different stages of business, certain terminology, you know, kind of gets a different meaning throughout different stages. You know, I heard the word delegation before. I never really bothered to look it up. It just made sense. Delegate means get somebody else to do something else.
All right.
That's how kind of, you know, that's how I looked at it, right? And years later, I've learned that I had no idea how to delegate properly.
Okay.
You know, because when you delegate, there's all these rules, right? You have to kind of explain people what's expected, how you're going to measure this result, why they shouldn't go back to you or they should go back to you, right? So the idea is when you build a company or a process or a team that, you know, that team works independently, right? I think, you know, in the beginning, especially like any company, essentially you don't have individual team members. It's you and everybody's your assistant.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you're sending somebody a screenshot. They have no idea what you mean by it. But hey, please get this done. Get this done. Get this done. Get this done.
Yeah.
Right. So you're just throwing tasks around, and you're so busy that you even forget to check that you just forget that you actually asked somebody to do something.
Yeah.
Right. So you know what we do now is that, you know, people, and once again back to the processes and kind of standard procedures and system of reports is, you know, I want, and you know, I'm not perfect at it yet. I want people to understand what's required of them.
Mm-hmm.
What are the reasonable deadlines? Where do they go ask for help? You know, I encourage them, for instance, to, instead of going back to me all the time, you
right.
know, interact with other team members. And there's all these other things that are kind of in this process that I definitely didn't know before.
To me, delegation, if I can sum it up as like one term, it's give something away, don't throw it away, right? Right. Give it away, don't throw it away,
right?
Right. You can give somebody something to somebody, right, with respect and care, or you can just toss it at them and say, get it done,
yeah.
Right? So to me, to delegate means to hand off.
Have you done a lot of tossing?
I've done a lot of tossing, and they got tossed right back in my face, right? That's typically
and
what happens.
And you wonder why.
Yeah, right? What happened? Like
you don't get it?
Yeah.
You don't get it?
I told you to do it, but you didn't get it done, and now I got to deal with a, you know, a problem that's double the size. But in reality, I'm the responsibility is on me to hand it off properly.
No, I'm reading a book right now, and it talks a lot about accountability, and they use this term called front load accountability.
Okay.
Essentially, what this means is, you know, before you get somebody to do something, explain, you know, kind of what I mentioned previously. You know, this is what you're going to do. This is why you're going to do it. This is why the company needs this to be done. This, those are general deadlines for things like that. And, you know, this is how we're going to check up on the progress.
Right.
So you kind of lay out that whole process. The person knows what's expected of them. You explain to that person, you know, what... and
what's sure, required, yeah.
Yeah, what's required. I don't know. Have you had this moment where you gave someone to do something, they don't know if they're doing a good job or a bad job. There's no ways to measure
right
if they're doing a good or bad job. Now,
right.
front load accountability is when people understand up front
right.
how it's going to be measured, and they know what they need to get done for something to be done well. They don't need
right.
to ask to have done a good job.
Right.
They will know, right?
Based on those metrics.
Exactly.
Nice. Talk to me about one of your biggest screw-ups, being, you know, an entrepreneur, being a businessman, self-employed, in your business, particularly like in your job, in your empire that you've built.
You know, the one that I still can't let go, COVID was an interesting time. There were a lot of great opportunities, a lot of money was made, a lot of new clients were acquired. So I think, you know, during that time, I kind of lost touch with reality, and I just started buying equipment, you know, let's do rentals, let's do this, let's do bins. So I went and I bought 2 trucks and 40 bins because I was going to launch a disposal business.
2 trucks and 40 bins.
Yeah,
all right.
So I spent,
one shot.
Yeah, about $700,000 I put myself
nice.
In debt because I thought it was a great idea.
Okay.
It really seemed that way at that time. And
yeah, you got to risk it to get the biscuit.
The idea is not bad. It's just what I didn't calculate at that time. It was an ego-driven decision. I just, you know, I felt like I was on top of the world. Anything
yeah.
I touch, I'm going to convert, I'm going to monetize. And this is where I completely lost touch with my capabilities and capabilities of my team. Yeah, you got to be careful to grow because, you know, growing, there's growing pains and there's aftermath if you don't grow properly.
So you bit off more than you could chew, it sounds like. That was the.
Yeah. I mean, like.
And
like,
then you were choking on that bone.
A lot of mistakes were made during that period, but like that was just like that. That's just a funny pinnacle. Like, I still have this, you know, they're just parked in the yard, and every time I drive by, I'm like.
But what did you learn from that mistake, like from taking on that massive challenge?
You know how you touched on this being younger, having all this crazy energy and you don't kind of feel the same way?
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that now you've learned, you're wiser, and your decision, you actually think more before you do, right? I wasn't thinking. So the lesson here is look at the numbers, take a breath. Yes, it might be exciting, but take a breath. Take a pause before you pull the trigger on something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you can relate, but I think it's just a thing with
how valuable was that lesson to you? Okay, all right.
I mean,
so
take
a pause, take
I
a break.
I did become a little bit more conservative in my decisions.
Okay.
You know, kind of steering away from that.
I got
impulsive
it.
Decision making.
You realize you're not, you know, the almighty, essentially, and you have some limited energy within you.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
Yeah. No, I've had similar situations, of course, where I definitely bit off more than I could chew, although I'm a little bit more reserved, and I'm a little bit more reserved in taking risks, but where my biggest mistakes happen is, and this took me a couple times to realize, and it's giving value or putting a lot of stock into other people, especially like mentors and stuff like that, I would trust their decision, I would trust their word and expertise more than I would trust my gut, for example. And that led me to some massive financial pitfalls and losses. Massive, right? I got robbed, I got lied to, I got cheated. And every time when I had to dig myself out of that same grave that I made for myself, because I'm the one that made the decision. I clicked that button, I signed that check. It was my signature on the dotted line. And every time I put those people on a pedestal, I put them as a value and as a priority higher than myself and my gut and what it is that I know, right? So that lesson took me a while to understand, like, Leon, chill. You know, maybe not as much as they do, but close enough, you can make your own decision and live and die with that decision, right? But don't put that much stock into other people. Other people, I had to realize, are doing things for their benefit and their benefit solely. And I had to let that go, right? And just understand that and look at it more of like a business approach rather than like a friendly approach. Oh, this guy's my friend. Let's go start, you know, this business venture together where I front load all of the money and you put up zero risk. And, you know, it's going to be a great, great partnership. I'm actually watching a great show right now about a psychiatrist. It's called The Psych Next Door on Apple TV. Great show just about that, how like this one guy gets taken advantage of. I'm not that insane, but, you know, maybe not too far from it.
Just to add on that, I mean, I definitely hear you. I think it's just sometimes, you know, I get excited and I want quick solutions.
Yeah.
You know, like patience. Business is teaching me a lot about patience because I have none. So the next guy comes in with this crazy offer, like, you know, it all seems very exciting. I get, you know, I want to jump.
You get eager.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's outside consultants or marketing agencies or
business partners
or employees, you know, there's been quite a bit of learning throughout time, and it's like I've even hired people to save my business.
Yeah.
No one cares. And they're not even supposed to care. It's
they're not supposed to care. It's on you.
Right.
It's your responsibility.
Right. It's your responsibility. And, you know, you touched on the gut feeling. And, you know, I've also realized I got to trust my intuition a little bit more because it actually doesn't lie.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I would have the decision here. Now, I would call you a business consultant, grandma. It doesn't matter. I'll make a lot of phone calls. And essentially, I would pay money for advice, and I'll probably arrive at the same conclusion.
Yeah,
at the end of
as
the
you had in the beginning.
Right, so it's like, you know, start trusting yourself. And as you said, no one will care as much. Now, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't go to consultants or advisors or mentors. I mean, there's definitely great value in those people, but, you know, only you know what you need and what needs to be done in your line of business, and you're free to kind of like take that advice, but you still got to process and make your own decision.
And I think here's a really key factor about becoming an entrepreneur is like mistakes are going to happen in any part of your life, in any facet, in your family, in your friendships, in your business, in your workplace, anywhere and everywhere. As an entrepreneur, I realized I have to accept the fact that these mistakes will happen and I'm responsible for fixing and dealing with all the mistakes. So just as I get to enjoy the ride up and all the money and the luxuries and the cars and the fun times, I'm also the one responsible for fixing all of the mistakes that come along. And everything that comes crashing down on me, that's all on me to fix. So that is I think huge integral part of being an entrepreneur is understanding that the ride's great, the financial opportunities are phenomenal, but the mistakes are and could very well be detrimental. They could take you out. So if you don't have that grit, if you don't have that, you know, power to push through, you're going to fucking quit.
Mm-hmm.
So which brings me to the next question. Have you been close to quitting. I know the answer to that.
Never.
And more so, how do you continue going since I know you didn't quit?
You know, you mentioned mistakes. And yeah, the mistakes are going to happen. And solutions will come. You know, what's actually really important is to maintain your cool. It's remain calm no matter what. And I'm still learning. doesn't come naturally to me, but it's harder sometimes to fight with my own head than to actually solve the problems. Because, and that's what I would definitely recommend to you. Like, there is a solution to every problem. Sometimes it seems like, you know, in the moment it just seems like that's the end of the world, and I've had many of those days. And then next thing you know, then it's really not. You just gotta step by step get to the solution.
So how do you continue going? Like, what do you say to yourself, or what motivates you to not give up? Because you and I talk often, and I know the problems that you're dealing with and dealt with. And they're just, to everybody listening, like, they're just regular business problems.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reality. But
you know, one of the cool things is, it's good to have somebody in your circle that, you know, is, you know, own some form of a business, because the problems that you think you have, because they seem, you know, this big, right? So, for instance, if
ginormous, you, just like right over your head, yeah.
And that feels very heavy. Now, once you, I think the biggest thing is, you know, biggest thing not to give up is just realizing that it's actually not as bad as my head thinks it is. Because it really isn't. Removing that extra weight from your shoulders, kind of getting back, you know, sometimes when you have tough times, the worst thing you can do is just keep fighting. Sometimes you got to walk away for a day or two and do the opposite of what your head tells you you should do.
Yeah.
Because my head tells me you got to grind, but like there's nothing to grind anymore. Go spend time with your family, loved ones, friends, and the answers will come.
Just like disassociate from the problem.
Now, you know, why...
Not run away, which is different. Just, again, disassociate. Yeah. Like, put yourself away. Put yourself in a different perspective. See life from another, like, side.
Because, yeah, you kind of get blinded by the magnitude, the perceived magnitude of the problem. You're
right.
Blinded, right?
And right.
I get paralyzed
right.
In times like this. So it's really kind of like... You know, what do you got to do to remove that pressure from yourself? Now, another thing, you know, about not giving up, it's, well, I'm going to give up on what?
And do what?
And then what? Like, I'm not done with this yet.
I got you.
You know, so it's always, instead of, a lot of it is mental, to be honest. Kind of have to, you know, instead of seeing a problem, pose that as a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm addicted to, you know, kind of working through challenges.
Right.
And once you're able to shift the perspective and get in the solutions mode, you just keep moving.
Yeah, no, I get it. The quitting part, obviously, like that, I think that goes on in every entrepreneur's mind, probably on a daily basis more than they like to admit to themselves. But for myself, like, obviously I've thought about it. What keeps me going, okay, on a very basic and practical sense, is staying disciplined, going to the gym, and staying mentally consistent. The gym really helps me take out a lot of energy out, mm-hmm. right, in a different form than like thinking, yelling, fighting, doing all that stuff. The gym really helps me like extract all of that energy in a very physical form and get my body tired and get my mind, you know, working and pumping in a different way. So in a very basic sense, that helps me a lot. Staying consistent, right? Like staying off of drugs, staying off of alcohol, even though I do indulge, right? I know you don't whatsoever, but even though I do indulge, it has to be reciprocal to my age, right? It has to be relatable to where I'm at in life. So if I'm not feeling well or the older I'm getting, I'm cutting down quite substantially because my body can't handle it. And my business can't handle it either. So if I'm drinking, if I'm partying and stuff like that, I can't perform as I need to, right? And mentally, that also screws me up because if that's what I'm doing, that's what my body wants to continue doing. So I tried to really negate that and cut it down as much as possible. And lastly, what stops me from quitting are the people that are, you know, around me. And I say that as genuinely as I possibly can, because I've got people in this business that rely on me. And I catch myself at the thought that, like, because I try and because I've built what I've built, these people can feed their families. These people can clothe their families. They can put a roof over their head, And that's because of the efforts that I put in. That's because of the risks that I took. And I provided and created this environment for them to thrive in and for them to feed their families in. Right? Not to mention my family and my friends that I help along the way as well from my successes. Right? So those things, on a very practical and very basic sense, is what keeps me going, right? From quitting. And on that, like, the next question is, like, what are your three top entrepreneur tips that you would give to any, like, starting entrepreneur in the industry or any industry?
Starting out or kind of being in the process already?
Whatever you like. Like, what are three tips that you think no entrepreneur can live without?
Maintain a healthy balance
in your bank account.
Well, that too.
Okay, but, you know, that's number one.
Well, just, you know, because I always bring an analogy of a sports car running on a track, right? Like, you're pushing, like, imagine your brain working at, you know, overtime capacity, right? Like, all these thoughts, calls, decisions. There's a lot of mental activity, right? So, like, if you don't get your brain serviced, and kind of like you mentioned, you know, going to the gym, spending, you know, perhaps indulging in some activities, spending time, like, whatever it is that you can do to kind of, like, you know, you got to sleep, you got to eat, like, don't forget about those things. It's very important, right? What happens to a sports car, you know, after every race, it needs oil changed and everything, right? Otherwise, it's just going to blow up, right?
Okay.
And I think a lot of entrepreneurs push themselves way too much, and then they burn out. So
give me the three entrepreneur tips.
Don't burn out.
Don't burn out, all right.
Don't burn out. Delegate.
Delegate.
Hire slow, fire fast.
Ooh, I like that. Hire slow, fire fast. Yes. That's a good one. I heard that one recently. I'm still practicing that one myself. Three entrepreneur tips that I would probably give somebody is, I don't know, I'm really bad at tips. I'm really bad. But if I had to guess,
sure,
if I had to just pick three.
You have too many, just pick three.
Three entrepreneur tips that I would give to somebody. Maintain a healthy bank account balance. Yeah, don't go into overdraft. Maintain your finances really well. That's number one. Number two is create a disciplines that you can live by and a schedule, right? Because you're not working for somebody, you're self-employed. Therefore, it's your responsibility to create a schedule. What time are you getting up? Where are you going to the office? How are you dressing? What time are you eating? Lunch, breakfast, dinner? What are you eating, right? What are you fueling your body? And what is your evening? What does your, like, relaxed time look like? So number one, maintain a healthy bank account balance. Number two, maintain a healthy schedule that you can adhere to in a disciplined fashion. And number three, don't give up.
Don't give up.
Just grind it out.
That you know, that financial literacy, I think that's huge, actually, because a lot of entrepreneurs are very impulsive in their decisions.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want this done, but you got to reference back to numbers. That's for sure. That calms you down, and then decisions become definitely more rational.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing on scheduling, actually, I watched this podcast recently, and they said you have to include your leisure time and sport as a part of your business process. It goes on your schedule.
Totally.
That's the first thing that actually goes on your schedule. Because otherwise, you'll never do it.
Totally. Yeah. Business is more than just about making money. It's a way, it's a lifestyle, right? The only difference between you and I versus somebody who has a 9-to-5 is we're responsible for our own schedule. That's it. And a 9-to-5, somebody else is responsible and they give you those time frames.
They tell you the dress code.
Right. They tell you where to be, when to come and when to leave, essentially. For us, as entrepreneurs, like, we can work a 12-hour, a 14, a 16-hour day, right? But the next day, we might be able to take off. We have to fill that time off with something productive at the same time. And here's one that I know you like. As an entrepreneur, how do you deal with the I'll do it myself syndrome?
It's a huge nemesis in business. This whole thing with only I can do it, you know, better, the best, and this and that. Essentially, it won't really get you anywhere. You know, if you're a one-man show, sure. But you got to start trusting your people. And, you know, we talked about delegating. You got to delegate properly. And having realistic expectations. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, where entrepreneurs in general are very hard on themselves. They expect a lot from themselves. And as a result, they mirror those unrealistic expectations onto others.
Mm.
And they never get fulfilled. It's just a vicious circle, right? It's like, you know, give a task to somebody else. Don't throw it at them. Don't toss it to them, right? Like, just
hand it over.
Right,
but warmly.
People have to make some mistakes. That's, you know, the only reason why, you know, I have quicker decisions for certain kind of questions.
Tasks, yeah.
Today, or tasks today is because I've made mistakes and I've learned from them, right? So if you don't allow other people to make those mistakes, they will never learn.
The I'll do it myself syndrome is a funny one, because obviously I want to do everything myself. Because I know better than everybody. I'll do it quicker. I'll do it, you know, much more efficiently. But it doesn't work in terms of, like, scaling a business, building,
no.
Relying on teammates. Same thing on a sports team, right? There is a superstar. There can be a superstar on the team. But there's other players on the field or on the court. And those players need the ball. They need to be in action. They need to be conjoined together in this beautiful kind of, like, symphonetic harmony, where everything is, the ball is moving, right? And the goal is the same for everybody. There could be a superstar. You might be the superstar of that team. You still have to figure out for a way for the team to win, not just you as a superstar to rack up points.
I mean, you as a person have a very limited capacity. It might be greater than other people, but you can only do so much yourself, right? So
yeah.
If you want to see big results, if you want to see progress, if you want to maintain certain balance in your life, you have to start relying on other people.
Yeah.
It's a hard way to live.
Yeah, I'm always reminded about, like, Kobe Bryant, who's, like, I mean, huge figure, especially for me when I was growing up and I was watching basketball. Like, the guy was unstoppable. He's a complete monster, right? And they're in the playoffs, and he's taking every single shot, and he's double-teamed and triple-teamed. And, like, you can't stop him. You can't guard him. And then during one of the finals, I think it was in, like, 2008, 2009, the ball gets tossed to another guy named Ron Artest. And Ron Artest just, like, goes up and shoots a three-pointer. And Kobe's looking at him like, what are you doing? And he hits the shot, and he's like, great job. And Ron Artest later on said, he's like, I knew if I missed that shot, Kobe would have killed him. So he's like, he was very well aware that he was, like, taking that on. And, like, Kobe is the epitome of the I'll do it myself syndrome. And on that part, like, what does leadership look like then, right? Because we talked about that syndrome. Now, what does leadership then look like in your business or for an entrepreneur scaling?
So as the team grows, you know, I think micromanagement should be be included in that discussion as well. You know, a great leader is not the one that's going to do everything himself or herself, but rather a person that's going to get the right team together, delegate things properly, and keep everybody on track and motivate them.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, if you're a crazy micromanager, you're not really going to motivate your team. You're just going to burn everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So leadership is about, you know, is doing things by example, right? So if you expect your people to perform yourself. If you don't expect them to micromanage, stop doing that yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this a lot, actually, you know, kind of like in Tupac song, all eyes on you, right? All eyes are on you.
Yeah.
In that sense, people are you know, if you want them to interact with clients in a particular manner, then show it to them yourself. Like, don't do it for them. Be the example.
I see.
Right? That's a huge part, because
leadership is being that example, yeah, that beacon of, right, of light where they can look
and
up to.
You have to, right? And another part of it is, like, even if everything is going south in your business, you have to remain level.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you start spreading that worry around,
mm-hmm,
everybody's going to kind of pick up on it, right?
I see.
And
you have to remain steady.
Anything you want your people to do, show them how to do it. You don't have to do it for them, with them. Just show how it's done and be there.
Be an example of how it should be done.
Don't do everything yourself. Just be an example.
Yeah. Leadership's tough. I'm not going to lie. That's one aspect where I'm always fighting and, like, wrestling with leadership. Because on one hand, it's like, I'm sick and tired of showing you, do it yourself. And on the other hand, it's like, nope, this team is my responsibility. I have to own up to it. If somebody's not owning up to it, I have to make a decision. Do I coach them? Do I train them? Do I let them go? Right? But the buck stops with me. And I like when I get frustrated, because when I get frustrated, that means that's a point of contention that I need to look into deeper within myself and open up and, like, really dive into. And that's leadership to me, right? Being introspective. Being a strong example to the teammates.
Being responsible, really.
Totally.
Responsibility.
Totally.
It's,
yeah,
a huge part of it, right?
Yeah.
Instead of saying, oh, why isn't he performing? Well,
yeah.
I mean, sometimes it could be the case that you just have an incapable person for the,
yeah,
job. But for the most part, that means you didn't do something right. You either didn't,
yeah,
hire the right person, you didn't show them the tasks right, you didn't provide the right tools. So,
right.
Leadership also means carrying a lot of responsibility, because at the end of the day, you are responsible for how your team is going to perform.
Yeah. Remind me again why I decided to be an entrepreneur.
Make a lot of money and do nothing?
This is a fun one. Yeah, do nothing. That's the one. Do you think business owners can ever switch off? Because now, like, when I think about that question, like, can I switch off? That brings me back to my schedule, my discipline, right? There is a time when I can switch off. And that time actually has to be scheduled into my day.
That's the only way. I think,
yeah,
that's the only way, because my experience has been, it's very hard for me to stop thinking. Like, if there's a,
yeah,
problem, if there's a deal going on, or like, it's always on my mind until it gets resolved.
Yeah.
Now, you know, kind of, we've discussed a lot of things previously that, you know, you just have to make those mandatory shutoffs.
Yeah.
That's it. That is the only way. And it's hard.
It is.
It's very tough.
And I'm looking for things, like, when I'm looking to switch off, I'm looking to do exactly the opposite of what I do on a daily basis. So I don't want to talk about finances. I don't want to think about finances. I don't want to look at a single number. I want to go and take my dog for a walk, leave the phone at home, and go for a walk with a dog for about an hour, smoke a cigar, enjoy the sunshine. Even if it's negative 20 outside, I just want to be outside away from everything, right? So I want to literally take my physical body and separate it from my phone, from my laptop, from my office, from my people, so I can disengage.
The phone. I think the phone is the biggest
enemy. Yeah, it's an enemy and it's a friend at the same time.
It
it's
is.
A frenemy.
It depends on how you use it, right?
Totally.
It is your best
totally.
Friend, but it could also be your enemy.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I force myself into, like, I put the, you know, don't,
yeah,
disturb airplane mode.
Yeah.
That is the only way.
Yeah, I think switching off.
I'm wondering, you know, what am I missing there? That,
yeah.
That's you know, fear of missing out.
Yeah, no, I totally get it.
But you just, you know, you have to work. You have to be disciplined and consistent. Like, it's actually worked on its own.
Give me some, like, you know, perspective here between what you have as business goals and what you have as, like, personal freedom and personal ambitions. How do you, like, disassociate the two? How do you marry the two? Or are they just one? Are they just in Edward?
You know what?
And
they
like,
definitely were one, but this is where I found myself living inside my business. And I, you know, and with that, it's so easy to kind of sink in that, you know, I'm the type of guy that, you know, it's called, sorry, I forgot what it's called.
That's okay. We'll remember next time.
What I'm trying to say is that, you know, a lot of my happiness, in the form that I think about it, depends on business success.
I see.
Right? So, and I've lived like that for many years, and I've realized that...
But that's a real high, right? When you're hitting targets, when you're seeing like hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars like rolling through, you get really freaking excited.
You nailed it. You said it's a high.
It's a high.
So what I'm trying to learn right now is how to enjoy life without the highs or lows.
Yeah.
Right? It's how do I appreciate basic things? You know, it's I've been able to obtain certain materialistic things, but and I thought like, you know, it's always been once I do this, once I get this, once this happens, it's always conditional.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the word would be learn to live and just to live unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
Kind of. Learn to live unconditionally. Without the condition of like having something happen to you for you to
like business is
to
business,
feel joy
and
in
I
a
think
sense.
It's definitely it's an integral part of who you and I are, and like you just don't fight it. You can't take that away, but it's learning. But at the end of the day, it's a job.
Yeah,
it's a job. It's our tool to fulfill ambitions and make money, right? So can't have your life be dependent on business results.
I think business and personal goals and like business goals and like personal freedom, they're really intertwined. Especially like, I think you nailed it on the head when you said it's within us, it's integrated. Because, man, I was delivering newspapers when I was 11 years old. I was self-employed at 11 years old. Like, it's a joke, you know what I mean? But like, I really did that. And then I only went on from that point on. But what I'm trying to say is like, why did I do that? Because I wanted autonomy, right? I wanted to be my own independent man. Even with like $100, $200 from delivering newspapers, I wanted that satisfaction to like do it on my own. It is an integral part of us, right? That being self-employed, it's ingrained. I never saw myself wanting to work for somebody. I wouldn't mind working with somebody side by side or working for somebody's company, but for the sheer efficacy of learning something new, obtaining a new skill, getting some new knowledge. I always think about it. Let's say my life changed today and I had to fly out and live in Singapore or Thailand or wherever the fuck. What would I do, right? Where would I work? What would I do? How would I like make a living, right? Obviously, I'd sell all my assets and probably live like a king somewhere. Joking,
no,
probably
think,
not,
yeah,
but...
It's just that drive. You'll figure it out.
I think so. And I keep going back to the same point of like, I will figure it out. That's the one thing that keeps going, like, I will figure it out. So like business and personal, to me, it's like intertwined. It's in my DNA. It's like, Leon, you're going to go, you're going to figure it out. If you got to work for somebody, you work for somebody. And if you got to work for yourself and make money, then you'll do that too.
And I think also, I think I went a little too philosophical in life. But it's, you know, once I start being consistent in business, I start being consistent in my personal life, right?
Mm.
So it's like once I start making a schedule, my work schedule, then I start making schedule for the gym and family and stuff like that, right? So it's kind of like you, business and you got to grow together, right? Mm. Like
The way you do anything is the way you do everything.
Essentially, yeah.
So if you build good habits, they're going to obviously trickle down to your personal life as well.
Right. So, you know, it's before you change your business, change yourself.
What are you working on improving this year in your business?
Revamping the team.
What does that mean? Everybody's getting fired?
Well, not everybody.
Some people.
They're still keeping me for some reason.
All right.
But yeah, no, definitely introducing new talent. And I think the main transition is, you know, like systemizing things. You mentioned financial literacy and getting to a point where decisions are more rational than impulsive. Instead of wondering how the team is working, you're setting KPIs. KPIs, never even, I've heard
What is KPI?
Key performance indicator, right?
All right.
It's something that actually allows you to see how your team is performing, right?
So gotcha.
Instead of thinking, well, I'm going to fire this guy because of this and that, like it's really comes down to what people perform, aligning the team to perform to a certain goal. Hope that answers it.
Yeah, no, for sure. For me, in terms of what I'm working on improving this year, I gotta say it's systems, right? It's system automations, to be honest with you. Bringing in more on the top flow funnel, bringing in more business in the top flow, right? My job as an entrepreneur is to burst through the walls and have those floodgates open with agents, with deals, with opportunities. And then have the system underneath me be able to manage it and filter it out efficiently and close all the deals, right? That's what I'm working on.
I think so, efficiency is really the key word here. Working on efficiency. Making
totally.
Making things more efficient.
Yeah.
That's it.
Any like any specifics that you want to like touch on in terms of like tools that you're using, any methods that you're using, or is it just like a main general like...
I think it's, in a nutshell, you know, so... just being clear on who's doing what.
Gotcha.
How we measure their performance. How we get more sales. How like it's all about, you know, increasing performance.
Gotcha. So you're looking at company structure. You're looking at KPIs, right? That's essentially it. You're looking at the tools that can help you do that. I know you and I were talking about different CRMs. Different systems.
Right. So it's like the
you're looking at outside help. You're looking at hiring consultants to come and coach you, right? Help you take a look at the company from like another perspective, yep. Which I'm doing as well. Cool, got it. If you could build something that outlasted you, what would it be?
Okay, forget it.
I know, like. The way I would answer that, if I could build something that outlasted me, what would it be? It would be a system. It would be the brand, Turkin, right? You can call it whatever you want, but we're going to call it Turkin because that's my brand, and I want that to outlast me. So when I'm gone 200 years from now, I want this system that I've built to continue churning out deals, to continue getting opportunities to people to earn a living for their families. So I do want to build a system that continues going. I don't know if that's possible or not. I might be a little way too ambitious, but it would be great if this tool could help society, and especially my society, Canada, Toronto, wherever I'm living, whoever is integrated in that system, for them to continue going, making money, feeding their family.
That's a good goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really, nothing really comes to mind, as of now.
Okay, that's cool.
That's a great question. I'll take it home.
All right. Tell me a bit about your clients and stuff like that you see. Like, obviously, we see, like, a ton of wealthy clients. You do landscaping. So you're doing these, like, massive $500,000, like, projects and yards and pools, front yards, backyards in, like, multi-million dollar homes. What do these high-end clients, like, what do they do?
They make money.
Yeah, I get they make money.
They manage their money very well.
Yeah, they manage it well?
Yeah. A lot of our clients are either business owners or they're professionals. They're taking up top tiers in the corporate world. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they're engineers.
Right.
And a lot of them actually, besides having the jobs that they have, they invest in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
They invest, period. Right? They're very smart about their money.
Mm-hmm.
Working with a rich client, with a high-end client, doesn't necessarily mean they'll never throw money around.
Mm-hmm.
They count it very well. So in certain cases, the projects that we do, I mean, even that they treat as an investment.
Mm-hmm. So on that, like, what do you think it means to be wealthy, thinking of those clients? Because when I think about that, and it's funny how you just mentioned they don't throw their money around, but at the same time, they're not cheap on, they're not frugal on spending money on quality stuff. And to me, when the question comes up, what does it mean to be wealthy? I'm taken to my brother-in-law's saying, and he always says to me, you're not rich enough to purchase poor quality products.
Right, I've heard that too. Yeah, it's a good
You're not rich enough to purchase cheap products. And what he means by that is, if you buy cheap products, you're going to end up paying twice, three times,
yeah,
four times over. Right, because that product is not going to do what you want it to do. That product is not going to last as long as you want it to last. It's not going to bring you the joy, the comfort, and it's also not going to have the long-term appreciation value, or it's going to depreciate super quick. Right?
Value. I think value is the key word here. Those people have true appreciation of value.
Mm-hmm.
It's with where they live, mm-hmm. where they buy their properties.
Location, okay.
It's with the cars they drive.
Okay.
It's with the investments they make.
Right.
A lot of them, I always see, you know, they travel a lot.
Right.
Sports, they're big on sports and fitness.
What does that mean, they're big on sports? Like they partake in it, like to keep active, to keep healthy?
It's very common to show up to a client's house, they come back from a run.
So when you see a client and like you think of the... You see the client, and then you think to yourself, this person's wealthy. What do you mean when you say that to yourself? Like, when you see you're pulling up to a client, what does wealth, like, resemble itself as?
I mean, finance is a big portion of it, right? But it's also how they handle themselves and the activities they partake.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to talk on weekends. They really value their weekend time. That's mm-hmm. their family time.
I see.
A lot of our clients, they travel a lot, as I've mentioned.
Yeah. Interesting. I see them too, right? Like, and I see these wealthy clients of mine. They are, they're doctors. Not just regular doctors. They're specialized, right? They're neurosurgeons, anesthesiologists. They are, what do you call them? Radiologists. Right, 700, 800, 900K in income, working crazy hours. Right, I've got asset managers in Brookfield, for example. I've seen T4s $600,000-$700,000 on a T4 in 1 year, like big numbers, seriously big numbers. And you're right, location matters to them in terms of property. They take their time to research the product and to know the professional they're dealing with. Right, they really look you up and down in terms of, is this a coherent, responsible, respectful individual that I could do business with, right? That's the way that I feel when I'm dealing with them, right? So I do have to come prepared. And to me, wealth is they want to do things on their terms.
Mm-hmm. But and they value their time.
They do value their time. It's very important for me to set my boundaries with them as well. You value your time, Mr. Client. I understand, and I'm going to respect it. I'm going to do my best to earn your business, but at the same time, there's a certain boundary which we're not going to cross, right, with me and my time and what I'm bringing to the table. So I try to be respectful, but at the same time, stern, right, to tell them, listen, I also have boundaries which we're not going to cross. And if we can match that together, great, and if we can't, that's okay, let's move on. Last but not least, like, talk to me about like property investments, because I know you invested into some properties, into some flips, or thinking about it, and you've had some, like I've had my own experiences with that as well, because obviously, like, I'm in real estate, I do mortgages, you're in real estate, you do landscaping, and we're constantly hearing people, like, you know, talking about the great flips they had, or like Instagram influencers, like, buy this, sell it, make 2,000,000%. Retire in Bali on a mountain, live like a king. The reality is, you and I both know it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So tell me about your experiences, if you can, in terms of investing into real estates and flips.
The reality is a little more complicated than making a million on Instagram, that's for sure. I've been able to purchase two properties, and you know, one of them didn't do well at all. It's literally sitting on the market right now, and
why is that? Why didn't it do well?
It wasn't a thoughtful purchase. It wasn't really initially an investment. It was a personal purchase. It just made sense at the time, but you know, proper research wasn't done, and you know, this is something I might touch on. You know, like really research. Research who you're working with. You know, you need a good mortgage broker. You need a good real estate. Find people. Not like, don't look for people that are gonna knock off that little, you know, fraction of a
A percentage point,
Yeah, like that should not be your concern. Look for someone who knows the market. We can predict the market. You know, study cases. You kind of have to dive in into this industry. It has a great potential. You can make good money, but you know, you have to research your stuff. So, you know, that one property is just sitting there. I was hoping that the market would inflate, but it's nothing is happening with it, right? You know, another property that we acquired in Toronto, it was a very promising deal, and it happened to be so, actually. Everything went smooth. Purchased it, you know, for a certain amount, listed it, sold it the next day, and problems started after, because certain the renovation that was conducted, you know, with the partner in question, kind of on this matter. You know, once again, lack of research, right?
Right.
You know, had some money, had somebody with a proven track record
right.
in that field.
So back to what we were talking about, relied on somebody's expertise, relied maybe too heavily upon somebody else's, like, practice.
100%,
yeah.
Right? Didn't do my proper due diligence, and, you know, it's... But a year later, after we had the first closing,
yeah.
we're still stuck on this deal. We're still going to walk out with profit, but it could have been done way faster. It could have been way more profitable.
Right.
There's huge carrying costs. So, you know, if you're going into any real estate deal, don't this better not be your last money.
Yeah.
Because that, like, there's, you know, it's everything is good in the perfect world, but the world isn't perfect, and things are going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So, I've seen many cases when people put their last money towards real estate and
yeah.
then they start freaking out because, like, you don't know how the market is going to respond.
Yeah.
So, in summary, I mean, I've always wanted to kind of have my service business and use the funds to purchase real estate because, you know, that's a very good long-term strategy, retirement strategy. Could be quick flips, but you know, you have to, just like with anything else you do, take your time, learn about things, take
mm-hmm.
a pause, research.
Yeah, so you're right. Just because I'm successful in one aspect, it doesn't automatically translate into success in something else, right? And as much as I know mortgages and as much as I deal with them, I've also made purchases on real estate where I've made like serious mistakes and I've ended up losing literally hundreds of thousands of dollars because I made really stupid, rudimentary, rookie mistakes. And again, goes back to relying on other individuals, being taken advantage of, not doing my due diligence properly, right? And it was almost like this default context, like, I'm in mortgages, what can go wrong? Like, I know this business inside out. As soon as I start thinking what can go wrong, I got this, that is a precursor to shit going wrong. So that's when I need to stop myself and say no. Leon, do not be so negligent and ignorant to think that you can't make a mistake. I'm human just like everybody else. And like I said, because I'm extremely efficient in one aspect of my career, which is mortgages, doesn't automatically translate into success into property flipping or home building. That's a completely different beast.
Right.
That I need to educate myself, that I need to understand the ins and outs, right? And... yeah, so I've been there. I've done it. So that's why I'm a little bit cynical and skeptical when people are calling me with opportunities or when clients are calling me and saying, hey, you know, this is a great opportunity I just got offered. And I'm there on the other side of the coin saying, well, have you thought about, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G? And they're like, I have not. Thank you for bringing this sober thought into my mind so I can actually contemplate on this matter a little bit more seriously.
Right. No, 100%. I think just anything needs to be done in a thoughtful way. And, you know, it's you get some extra money and then you always hear about real estate.
Yeah.
Real estate, you make all this money with
yeah.
real estate. You can.
You can, yeah.
You can. Just do it right.
Do it soberly. Yeah, do it right and do a lot of due diligence. That is all the topics we have for today, Eddie. Eddie Edward. This side is blank, so I have nothing else on there. And I think that's a wrap.
Perfect.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, well.
Bye-bye.